When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hear this, right now. Welcome.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Rupp and Jason Sakanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Let's fire it up. A holiday edition of Prime Time, an SOB edition. Schultzy, Ortner, and myself, Ryan Buckley, here with you on a Wednesday. Isaac and Suk now both out for the holidays. I believe that Isaac will be back next Friday, the 27th. That'll be the first time you get one of your regular hosts back. But today, we've got plenty to get to. We've carved out a lot from a number of different sports, and much like our fearless leader, Isaac Rupp, I've attempted to assign some topics here, like the college football cocktail, the NFL nibble, and the NBA nutcracker. So we'll see what happens as we get into all those. But bearing the lead here, Klondike Will Ortner, a man of increase, man who is always available, going to be doing about 8 hours of radio today.
It's a lot of radio. I still got a Pilots game I have to do, too.
What? Okay, yeah, I didn't know that part.
I'm here for a while.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's a long day. But you know what? It's a fun day. And Suk talks about this a lot. It's not digging ditches. It's talking sports. It's hanging out with the boys and the girls. It's great. I'm not worried about it. I'm excited to be here. I'm happy to be here.
I agree. It is not ditch digging. I was the same way when I started in TV production. I'm like, any shift you can throw at me, fine. I'm going to show up. I'm going to watch sports. I'm going to interact with other people who like sports. It's not that tough. It is a job, but it's one that's still pretty fun to do. Schultzy, how are we doing over there?
I am so fully into the Christmas season. Doing okay. Busy day today, but you know what? Just been listening to Christmas music for a month and a half now, so I don't want it to end. We're a week out from Christmas. We're probably going to be putting it on the show today, and I just wanted to keep going.
Yeah, outstanding. There's some Christmas stuff for us to get to, including in the club. There's one injury that spikes during the holiday season. We'll let you know about that and some PSAs to go along with it. We'll also get to, we have a couple primetime follow-ups, things that we've already touched on but need to revisit, including the stripper DJ stabbing and the road rage shooting.
Yeah, so it's not good.
Lots going on in the city of Portland in relation to crime, but Portland's also taken home a couple honors in the steakhouse and wine realm that we'll get to in the news. Also, where Americans are moving, I have some interesting data. We were talking recently about Oregonians and how many people who are born here stay here or who leave to go elsewhere. Now finding out where what states Americans are flocking to and what countries if they are leaving the country. But there's plenty of sports stuff for us to get to before any of that, and it requires yet another primetime follow-up, because yesterday, just before the club, Isaac wanted to get into the beef between Adam Schefter and Doug Gottlieb. And that all started because Schefter had a tweet about Sacramento State saying they had $50 million in NIL. Gottlieb, for whatever reason, felt the need to come over the top, call out Schefter, saying that's ridiculous. Well, Schefter wasn't going to take that. That's his corner that Gottlieb was trying to stand on. And so he took shots at Gottlieb about the record of his team at Wisconsin Green Bay and spending too much time on Twitter. I tend to side with Schefter on it. I think that Schefter's tweet was definitely off, but it seemed like the Gottlieb thing came out of nowhere and Schefter kind of put him in his place. That was not the worst thing that happened to Doug Gottlieb this week. Not by a lot, because today his team, Wisconsin Green Bay, a D1 team, was taking on Division II Michigan Tech, someone who he had previously called Nobody U, because he said, I don't know what we're doing playing these teams like Nobody U in the middle of December when it's 2 degrees outside and we're going to win by 20, and like, what can we actually gain from that? Well, today they lost to Nobody U, a.k.a. Michigan Tech, 72-70. And, oh, by the way, if that's the shot, here's the chaser, Doug Gottlieb, a no-show for his own radio show this afternoon after that loss.
I love Doug Gottlieb failing. I love when there are these people with brash and just rough opinions at times of, look at me, I'm going to come in and completely change the system, because that's what he thought he was going to do. That's why he called them Nobody U. Mm-hmm. That's why he thinks he can coach a football team and or a basketball team and run a 3-hour national radio program.
2-hour.
Doug got, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's a 2-hour. Yeah. Oh, it's only a 2-hour show. No, he gives us all a bad name.
Doug Gottlieb. He thinks he's, his stuff doesn't stink, and there's nothing better than it not going well for him.
Yeah, I'm not trying to correct you. It's the only reason I'm correcting you is because I don't want him to get credit for like doing a 3-hour show while being a head coach. No, it's only a 2-hour show.
I assumed he was. Like, who, you know, I just assumed. That's on me.
It's absolutely ridiculous that he is the way that he is. And people still want to give, like, I get it, you know, confidence and cockiness, like there's a fine line between the two of them. He obviously has a lot of confidence. I think a lot of people like me feel like it's kind of over the line to cockiness. I hate people like that, especially when I don't believe they have a reason to be like that. But Suits around our business and in the world of college basketball apparently believe that he does, and look at what's happening.
I kind of don't get what he's doing in general, and I don't mean with like the Twitter sniping. Does he have aspirations of being a big-time college basketball coach?
And if so,
then ditch the podcast or the radio show for a little while until you get that part. Or if media is your lane and you know you want to stay there, then you might have to wait on coaching for a while. But it feels to me more like he just needs to pick a lane. And I know we don't want to be raising athletes that only specialize in one sport these days, but we don't need a media personality that's also double-dipping as a coach. I don't think we need those things at the same time.
Well, but it's also setting yourself up for failure.
Like in both of them.
Guess what? Adam Schefter isn't going to attack Doug Gottlieb unprovoked.
Correct.
That's not what his job is. That's not what he wants to do. And then for Doug Gottlieb, shut your mouth. Why? Why would you go and try and provoke an attack when you aren't having the best year? Like, if you're having a good year and you want to run your mouth, like, dude, that's awesome. Go for it, man. Celebrate your wins however you want to.
Those who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones kind of a deal. Like, dude,
100%.
Your defenses are weak right now. If someone's going to clap back on you, you already know what it's going
to
be.
Well, and you're asking to get dunked on in that spot.
Because he's trying to dunk on someone else. It's stupid.
It's like when Micah Parsons does his podcast. Guess what? When the Cowboys are losing, they're going to be kind of mean to you on your podcast. And they're going to blame your your podcast and say that's the reason why you're not getting the sack you should get, or the tackles for loss. It's a classic. Put yourself in the spot.
As a Warriors fan, I've heard the same thing about Draymond Green plenty. If he cared so much about basketball and being good at basketball, he wouldn't spend so much time on the podcast.
The new
media and all that.
Does it really affect it? No, not really.
I've forever been somebody that hates the sports personalities doing media while they're players, like, or coaches. Like stick to one thing, as we're talking about. I've insulted LeBron for starting so much, you know, production stuff and done, like, what, 5 TV shows during his career while he's still on the court. So I will give the same crap to Doug Gottlieb doing the same thing, but just the opposite. He is usually a media guy, but now he's trying to make both work, being a basketball coach and a media guy. It just doesn't make sense.
See, and, like, I don't have an issue with it. Like, if you want to get your hands in as many avenues as possible, go for it. You know, like, if you can do it. But understand,
and that's the important part, if you can do it.
Understand that when it isn't going your way, they're going to hate it. They're going to love it. If Doug Gottlieb right now had Green Bay 12-0.
If they were rolling, even 10-2, whatever.
Right, they're awesome. I bet you he's getting a ton of listens, because you're getting the behind-the-scenes stuff. When the Warriors were going on their last title run and Draymond's doing his player-led media, people loved it. People were tuning in. you know, I kind of think that there are times where he picks fights on purpose just so that people will tune in, because that's probably the smart thing to do. But you have to understand.
There's
a
correlation between the technicals he receives and when his podcast comes out.
Right. Well, and you just have to be smart about it and understand and have the thickness of skin to go, hey, I'm not doing well right now. I just made a mistake. They're going to come after me. Like, this isn't going to go well. The other thing that I want to ask about this, do you think Doug kind of got Schefter a little bit?
Yes, I do.
Because
initially,
because the rumor isn't that they have 50 million. It's that they can have 50 million if they get to the FBS with Sac State. So the money is there. It's just not liquid. And when Schefter tweeted that out, everyone goes, oh, it's 50 million liquid. They have it right now. And so I kind of think that Gottlieb got one over on him, and Schefter said, watch this. You have a nice right jab. I'm going to have a better left hook.
The tweet obviously implied that it was 50 in NIL money, which is more than Ohio State, more than Oregon by like 2.5 times.
Yes, exactly right. The belief is that the schools with the most NIL right now have about 20 million a year. And if Sacramento State entering the FBS was going to come in with 50 million, that there's nothing about that part that adds up. Someone joked that Schefter might've accidentally like missed a decimal spot, that it should have been 5 million in NIL, which could have been more realistic for that group. But either way, the text line pointing out we were talking way too much sports for this first segment. Granted, it's a little bit Twitter beef as much as it is sports, but want you to be part of the conversation today on the fan text line, 503-864-6326. Also over on our YouTube at 1080 The Fan. Someone here says, congrats, Doug. This is the most anyone has talked about you since you swiped some credit cards from your teammates. Oh, wait. Or commented on Freddie Freeman's contract. That's signed Todd. Wanted to bring up something else, Schultzy, to get away from the Schefter bit. Schultzy, you mentioned being in the Christmas spirit. You guys ever do white elephant gift exchanges where you, or even a gift exchange where it's not necessarily white elephant, but you have a hard limit of what you can spend, like only $20 or something
Yes.
like that?
Yes. Yeah. I have a thing right now in my family.
Okay.
And not to derail the segment.
No.
We're doing Secret Santa this year.
So are we in my family.
Here's the problem. The person running Secret Santa, I don't think understands the secret part of it.
Oh, they've told everyone who they have?
In a family group chat. In a family group chat, they came in and said, Will has this person has that. It's like, hold on, this isn't Secret Santa. And then here's the kicker. So this person, they are doing Secret Santa because a lot of the youngs, I fall into this, we don't have a ton of money.
Sure.
So it's easier if we do the Secret Santa, so then each person gets one person a gift.
Yeah. I mean, even when not dealing with the youngs, granted, I have a couple, my youngest sister is
right.
Your age.
Mm-hmm.
We have family all the way up to my age and significant others, and rather than, but there's eight of us.
It's a lot.
So it's too much to buy all eight people a decent gift, so what mm-hmm. we've agreed to do is get everybody one nice gift, and
right.
or one person a couple nice gifts, and
right.
do it that way. It makes a lot of sense.
So they're now, and they don't have me in Not-So-Secret Santa. They are asking me, like, different things that I, like, hey, don't you like this? Don't you like the 1080 The Fan t-shirts? Don't you like listening to this show? Don't you like watching that movie? They're clearly fishing.
Of course
to
they are.
Buy me a gift. And now the question is, do I have to buy them a gift?
Oh, no. No, you're still just responsible for buying the gift of the person you drew. I don't think you have to do a reciprocating gift.
But I would feel guilty.
But that's not in the spirit of the Secret Santa. The idea is everyone gives a gift, everyone gets a gift. So
no.
it's a net zero. So I think you're off the hook there.
It's
now,
not
the
so
fact that you
Santa.
Want to is very nice. But what I saw today, which I loved, is that this person said, this was on Twitter, and the person said, at my cousin's job, they do a white elephant where you have to buy a $20 gift for someone else. One of her coworkers gave someone the rights to and printed out an 89-1 9-leg parlay. Incredible move.
Ooh, good gift.
So what the person did is they took their $20 to the window, they put it on 9 teams, and they threw it in the white elephant pile, and somebody is potentially sitting on an $1,800 payday if that thing hits over this weekend.
That would be so awesome if it
my next
granted,
move.
if the if Thursday night football goes poorly and the Broncos just beat the Chargers, that thing is dead before it even gets started. So it's I'll be interested to see what happens with that. I kind of like the idea of a gifted betting slip that has the potential to yield a lot more than you paid for it. I've always liked the idea. I've heard of people doing a Masters party on Sunday where you go to like a casino that morning and you get tickets on the top 10 people on the leaderboard and say, you know, everybody draws one out of a hat when you come in and it's like $5 each and you eventually have a winner out of that. I also like the idea of having a Super Bowl party and getting like 10 or 12 or 15 anytime touchdown score slips and having people pick one at the at the door. But I think that gifting futures tickets is a fun way of navigating the gambling space.
My brother, for his wedding, his gift to the groomsmen, well, part of it was a future your Super Bowl team.
I remember that. Or a Super Bowl future on your favorite team.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. So, like, I got a Super Bowl future on the Seahawks. Doesn't look so great for me. But there's a couple that got some decent ones.
That's such a good idea. My aunt usually included, like, scratch-offs, you know, or, like, lottery tickets inside of, like, our cards. But, no, I'm taking this idea and running with it. Absolutely.
One year, I did one with my friends. This was probably 10 years ago. And I didn't know what $10 or $20 gift to pick up, so I grabbed a $20 Taco Bell gift card, and you know what? That wasn't a Secret Santa. It was a White Elephant exchange where people are, you know, stealing and giving back, and it wasn't for anyone specific. That Taco Bell gift card was popular, I tell you.
There you go.
The text line telling us that their White Elephant gift idea is a loaf of store-bought bread, but in between the slices, it has scratch-offs. I like that idea. So it doesn't look like a good gift until you get inside the loaf. That's not too bad. All right, we got to keep things moving here on the show as we're on the television as well over on the CW. Ooh. Coming up next, we have some football news, and it's not great. It appears that perhaps Washington State has replaced Oregon State as the saddest football program in the Northwest. More on that coming up next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Now, folks, this is Synergy. We get a little Mannheim Steamroller Deck the Halls coming back. Isaac had requested we have some Christmas music throughout the show yesterday and Monday, which I did, and I meant to tell Schultzy I thought we should keep that going today, and right before we came back from break, I was going to have him put some festive music in, and boom, it was already there. So here we are.
What is this?
In the, well, it's
Mannheim a... Mannheim Steamroller.
It is a Deck the Halls. It's just a synthy version of Deck the Halls.
So Mannheim Steamroller, huge, huge band from '80s was their most popular time. Essentially, it's just all synthesized and some like regular instruments, but it's a really new agey techno version of Christmas songs.
Well, let's get back into some people who are not exactly feeling the holiday spirit. I already feel like they've been left with coal in their stockings. And that would be the Cougars of Washington State. Because today we found out, just on the heels of the fact their quarterback is heading into the transfer portal, now their head coach is gone as well. So they have 22 players who have left the program and no head coach going into their bowl game. Jake Dickert electing to take the head job at Wake Forest, and I don't know how long this was brewing. I don't know if it's something that people up in and around Pullman were anticipating. It sounds as though this took the team by surprise, as players who were reached out to said, haven't heard anything from coach. This first we've heard of it. So obviously there's a lot not to like about this time of year in college football, coach movement, player movement, transfer portal, stuff like that. But beyond any of that, I thought it was something of a coup that the Cougs were able to keep Dickert with last the realignment year. Last year.
Yep.
And listening to him talk and talk about loyalty and things like that, obviously coaches are at the end of the day going to do what's best for them. But some of the things that he had been talking about recently made it sound as though he's still in it with the Cougs, and that's not the case anymore. And that's going to be a really tough pill for the Cougs to swallow. I think he was had things going in the right direction despite them being one of the teams left out in the cold when all the realignment hit. And now I don't know where they turn. There are some reports they could even go back to their offensive coordinator who left, Ben Arbuckle, and give him the head job. There's even speculation that John Mateer could follow him back to Washington State if that were the case. But before we figure out who the next man is going to be, the state of Washington State athletics is not good right now, and I don't know when it's going to get better. There certainly isn't any writing on the wall to indicate it's going to anytime soon.
Yeah, I think the reason that you got to keep Dickert last year was because of how the season ended. You started off hot, and then you end 1-6, right? There was a point where you were 5-0, and then you get absolutely steamrolled, and it kind of felt like as soon as they knew that Cam Ward was kind of starting to sniff around and look at other places, along with other players, that's kind of when it fell apart. This year, You had a skid at the end of the year. There's no reason that you should have lost to Oregon State. You know, it didn't feel like Dickert handled the end of the year well, or at least the Cougs in general. So that instantly starts getting people's antennas up of like, okay, that means this guy might be leaving. And obviously all eyes were on Mateer, right? He seems to be the prize. Someone is going to offer him a bag. And by all likelihood, it sounds like Oklahoma has done that. I don't blame Dickert here. And I think Washington State fans can be upset. Oregon State fans were upset last year when Jonathan Smith left. I think the worst thing for Washington State fans is the timing, and you can be upset about that because some of the hires that you would have went and tried to get, the Idaho coach, Eck, he's already gone to New Mexico. The OC that was at UNLV, who was running the go-go offense, he's already taken a job. He's now down at Sac State at the FCS level. Would you be able to pull that guy up? I don't necessarily think so, because there's smoke around Sac State becoming a Pac-12 team. So why would you leave one Pac-12 team for another, right? So you can be upset about the timing, but to be upset with Dickert in him leaving, I think is foolhardy.
Yeah.
This is your lot in life now. And to be honest, it kind of was your lot in life just from a slightly better perch.
And you know what? The other thing that, and Isaac brings this up all the time, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it's true. People in the text line pointing out that WSU, as you said, really took a dive in the last month of the season. And that usually starts to happen when coaches' eyes aren't on the ball anymore, when they're starting to look around at what their next gig is going to be.
And when the players are too.
100%. And so you have greener pastures, other places, and like it or not, that's the landscape for the Cougs right now, and that probably contributed to their late season slide, and it's hard to, I mean, I don't really know what you expect Dickert to do. It's just yet another reminder of the new unfortunate reality, and this one is maybe one of the biggest blows yet besides just being left out of the realignment.
Well, the other thing too is like, if you get a better job offer, do you go, well, no, I'm loyal to my job here over at Sales Incorporated. I need to stay. Like, if you get offered more money in a more prestigious role,
you do go
and leave.
Yeah.
And so should Dickert. And I get it. It's sports, so it's different. So we feel like he should be, you know, he should be a Coug. He says he wants to be a Coug. He has to say those things. That's his job, because he means those in the moment that he says those things. But the minute that a better job opens up, of course he leaves. Of course he's going to take it. The only issue that I might have with Dickert is how he handled it with the players. It sounds like he didn't go and talk to them. I think that's Bush League. You need to tell your players that you are moving on.
So, and I'm curious your perspective on this, because I wonder, is there a way that coaches are supposed to handle it?
And
is this time of year, I mean, I don't know if Washington State's already on break, if they already had their finals. Maybe you can't get the team together because people are already home.
They're prepping for this bowl game.
Oh, that's right.
They have a bowl game a week.
Yeah.
Yes. If they were if this was Oregon State and he bounced out this way, I wouldn't feel, I might lean a little more his way, but again, have a Zoom meeting. Teams do it all the time.
You can get them in the conference room for a Zoom meeting from Jake Dickert. Be like, hey guys, before this breaks.
And even sending a text would be better than sending nothing.
There's a team group chat. It's super easy to do it. And here's the thing. Guys aren't going to rip you. Guys aren't going to jump up there and yell and scream. That's never happened. Again, D2 level, it's still a pretty decent barometer of how it's supposed to be handled.
Well, the structure is similar, and the hierarchy is similar, and just like in D1 and D2, people leave for different jobs, better jobs, ones that get more money, more
all
exposure.
All the time. Never once did I have a coach that wasn't fired say where they were going. You don't have to sit up there and cry. You don't have to sit up there and say, I love you guys and I didn't want to leave. You just tell them where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're the head coach, I understand, especially with the timeline now, you might not have the opportunity to tell the guys like, hey, if you need to have a meeting with me, if you want to have a meeting with me, you can have it. I'll be in these places. But most of the time, you just have to handle it a certain way. And that is, I am leaving. I have a better opportunity for my kids, my family, and I'm going to do that. And I'm going to take that opportunity. Most of the players are going to go, yep, I get it. The players that say they don't get it are the ones that are probably never going to have that opportunity. Or they're the few, the proud, that are so locked in on WSU that they've wanted to be a Coug for life. They know it's the only spot that they want to be, and they wouldn't feel better anywhere else.
And even in, like, just...
Just let them know you're going.
But also, in 2024, that type of player almost doesn't exist anymore. Not because people don't care about the place that they are, but the norm is now continue finding the spot that's a little bit better. And it's not, I signed up for 4 years. It's, I signed up for right now, and we'll see what comes later.
And that's kind of the new landscape. And if you're, like, here's the thing. If you're a Cougar fan, you're upset about this. Totally get it. Guess what? With your OC leaving and you firing your defensive coordinator, you're going to do the same thing to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it sucks. I think it sucks more for Coug fan because it's Wake Forest. And 2 years ago, you were better than Wake Forest. WSU at one point was a better job than what Wake Forest is.
Well, and throughout a lot of this season, WSU, even though an outside shot, was a more likely playoff candidate than Wake Forest.
And we just got this on the Vancouver Ford text line. Better playoff chance, Wake Forest or WSU? It's Wake Forest. Because if Wake Forest wins their conference,
They're automatically in.
No offense to WSU right now. Here's the thing that I don't think most people understand about the playoffs and this WSU team. If WSU didn't get into the top 12, they weren't making the playoff. If, let's say, WSU lost that game to Oregon State, but they don't lose any other games, so they end up at like 15, and UNLV beats Boise State, and UNLV still ends up at 16, UNLV would be the group of five team in the playoff, because right now they're treating WSU and OSU like they're independents. They don't get a Power 4 or Power 5 automatic bid in the Pac-12, and they technically aren't a Group of 5 seed either. So the only way for them to get into the playoff is being basically 11 or better. And you're not going to do that at WSU. You just aren't. To have the schedule that you would need in a special season, which for 80% of this year, it was a special season because you had a special quarterback, mm-hmm, and a defense that was playing at a level higher than what you expected out of them, you weren't in the conversation because of your lot in life. You might get a slightly better lot when you combine with the Mountain West and you become a Group of Five conference, but I would still rather take Wake Forest's spot, where if they win the ACC, they're in no matter what, than Mountain West team where it's like, hey, yeah, we won our conference, but we still have to hope that Tulane isn't rated higher than us. We have to hope that Memphis isn't ranked higher than us. So that's just kind of where I fall on it.
Some good thoughts coming in on the fan text line, 503-864-6326. We'll get to some of those next and continue this conversation. What can we fix in college football? None of it is easy, but are there certain things that we can do that will make things a little bit better with very little tweaking? We'll discuss that coming up. But first, Schultze has the SportsCenter update. Love Christmas music. Love this specific song. Very underrated.
I'm anti.
Are you anti-Christmas music in general?
I got one Christmas song I vibe with, and everything else I'm kind of like, meh.
Wow.
This is one of the best ever, bro.
It's the same song by like three different people singing it. The same thing. Give me dreidel, dreidel.
Clearly you were not listening to Primetime yesterday when we did the Creed higher version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
That's funny. So maybe there's two. And the one Christmas song, I'm ashamed. I know I shouldn't like it. As a man. As a 27-year-old man, I should not like Justin Bieber's Mistletoe. But
that's
every
your one?
Time no. it comes on,
get the
I'm
hell out.
All about it. Yesterday at the Winterhawk game,
William,
I stuffed the ballot box to vote for Mistletoe by Justin Bieber over stupid
what
Mariah
is
Carey.
Wrong with you?
It's a great song, and it's an original.
Okay.
And he's awesome.
I won't say that you can't like that song, but for that to be the only Christmas song you like, and for you to want to stuff the ballot box over it,
it's better than
God,
Mariah
Ordner.
Carey. The other one was like Rudolph by Harry Connick Jr. I don't want to hear that.
That's amazing.
It's the same song. It sucks.
We will not be playing Mistletoe by Jay Biebs on this show.
We might have to at some point.
It's a great Christmas song, and it's the only one I can say. Nope, I'm wrong. Dropkick Murphy's Christmas song too.
Wow.
That's Isaac Rop. Isaac Rop put me onto that one.
We are gonna have
to find
the other one. I heard my stepdad sent me this the other day. There's a like a metal death rock screaming version of You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch.
Oh, God.
That probably doesn't need to be played on this air. Although what I did like is rapper Tyler the Creator did a cover of the You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch for an animated movie that my kid loves. And now that Tyler the Creator Christmas song is in heavy rotation for our family. But let's get back onto the college football path, trail, the college football cocktail, as it were. And with Jake Dickert leaving Washington State, I guess my first question is, how bad does it get and what does the immediate future look like?
I don't know that this really changes your immediate future. Like every year that you're good, you're going to get pillaged. Teams are going to come in and grab your best players. It's happened.
Would you expect them to be as good as they were this year, next year? Or do you think there's a drop off?
No, but I think they were lucky to be good this year.
Okay. Like, I think that's fair.
How lucky were you that you went from Cam Ward, a relatively nobody, to John Mateer, a relatively nobody?
Yeah, that's some pretty good fortune.
And you were able to turn them into something. So maybe then your argument is, well, Dickert, you know, offensive mind, kind of helping with that, helping build that. Okay. Like, you're lucky to have found those guys, and you lost your OC. Your OC, who had been such an integral part of the last 2 years in turning Cam Ward into a Heisman candidate and turning Mateer into one of the best non-Power 4 quarterbacks in the country, to the point where Oklahoma offered him, the rumor is somewhere between $3 to $3.5 million. Was Dickert going to come in and be able to do that a third time?
No,
I don't think that he was going to be able to.
Hard to imagine.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So how much does it change? I don't know. I think what we're going to see here with Washington State is where their headspace is at, because I think there are 2 to 3 different avenues that you could go down here. You go and you try and find a Kurt Cignetti type of a hire, a guy who has been a lifelong OC, DC, has been successful everywhere he's been. Maybe he's an FCS
type of coach. Yeah, someone who's absolutely thriving just one level below kind
yes.
of a deal.
And you finally go give him his opportunity, because that's what Indiana did. Like, the reason Cignetti is at Indiana isn't because Indiana had a ton of money. They decided to give him a ton of money after he had success. But the whole reason for them to get him was, he wasn't a splashy hire. It was, hey, this guy has been successful. Let's go see if he can be successful here. Because he's been successful in a smaller school and has transitioned them into a bigger school, into an FBS school. They're an FCS power, James Madison. Now they're an FBS relatively good group of five team. Do you go that route? Do you go and get the hotshot OCDC? Do you get the young guy? Do you go and grab the UNLV offensive coordinator, who's now the head coach over at Sac State? But do you go and try and find a guy like that who seems to be innovative, that go-go type of an offense? You go and grab a guy who's running a defense that is stopping teams at, you know, group of five, smaller power four level. If you go and grab that guy, understand that if he is what you think he will be, he's gone in three. That's what will happen. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of what Jake Dickert is.
And that's the brutal part of it, is there any avenue that doesn't include you being a stepping stone and also not being good?
No.
There is a special way to do it, but can you find a Kirk Ferentz? Can you find a Schneider like down at Kansas State? Even to a lesser degree, can you find your Mike Riley? Is there a guy who played at Washington State or grew up in the area mm-hmm. and who looks at Washington State and says, this is my peak. This is what I'm going to be. I understand that if I'm a good head football coach, my OC and DC, they're going to get taken away from me. Anytime I have a good coach, they're gone. If I have a good player, the year that he pops, he's either to the NFL or he's getting stolen. But I don't care, because I want to be here. And then you also have to have buy-in from the athletic department, where they go, there's going to be a couple years where we barely win 3 games. But there's also going to be years where it's a little more special, and we're doing it with 3-star guys, probably as your top top recruit. Yeah. You're not going to get the four-star guy. Your three-star guys are going to be the bulk of what you are, or the rest is going to be no star. So if you can find that guy, I don't know that that guy's out there. I don't see him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the timing is the worst for WSU, because I would have went and made a call to Eck at Idaho. He just took the New Mexico job. Mm-hmm. I would have made a call to the UNLV OC, whose name escapes me right now.
It's Brennan Marion.
Thank you. I kept wanting to say Moore, and yeah, I knew Brennan that was Marion. Wrong. Marion, he runs this go-go offense. Mm-hmm. He went through two different quarterbacks this year. They both flourished. Matthew Saluka was awesome.
Yeah, and then he was the kid offense. Because he wasn't getting his NIL, they just quit after four games.
And then Haj Malik Williams was great this year, yeah. And they ran the football well. But here's the other thing that's so impressive about Marion in that offense. Haj Malik Williams is a thrower who can run a little bit. Matthew Saluka is a runner mm-hmm. who can throw a little bit.
Did
you
it
have
two different styles,
and your only losses are to Syracuse, a very good Power Four team this year, and twice to Boise State, a playoff team this year. So can you find that next up-and-coming guy? And if you do, just understand, he's gone in three.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. You asked the question a little bit, Will, is if there's even somebody out there like that, or if Washington State's going to have to do something just like the Beavers did and basically give it to, you know, a legacy guy like you're talking about Washington State trying to find, but not like the legacy guy that was thought of as an up-and-coming head coach. Trent Bray was gifted the job. I'm sure he's a great guy, but he was not ready to be a head coach at the D1 level. And you're seeing why Jake Dickert left. Guys, going forward, even when they're able to put $1 million offer forward for their quarterback and try to keep him, you really have no avenues to success like you do in the ACC. And unfortunately, it sounds like the Pac-12, even with, you know, becoming Mountain West 2.0, adding all these schools, what this tells me, unfortunately, about the future of the Pac-12 is that they're not going to have that same Power 5 power that all these other conferences have in the college football playoff. And once Dickert got that confirmation, he gone. There is no point for any coach that sees himself like at a place worth any salt stopping at Washington State, because it's just going to be too hard for him.
And this is a sport that is hyper competitive, and everyone is trying to get to the highest level and achieve mm-hmm. at the highest level they can. And that also comes with a lot of money. So as we said at the beginning of this conversation, we can't expect people like Jake Dickert to really do anything differently.
No.
The question is whether Washington State can do anything to kind of break the cycle that they're in. And I think in the current landscape, that's going to be tremendously difficult.
Maybe you go and make a call to a Bronco Mendenhall type. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what you do, because that's a guy who he had success at New Mexico. He had a field storming at New Mexico. There were like 10 fans there. The only people watching that game were me and the guys who are working for that TV station. But they were good last year. They were fun to watch. New Mexico, they couldn't play defense, but they could play offense. And they won more than they were supposed to. They went over their win total. And Bronco Mendenhall is the type of guy who bounces around in a lot of those smaller spots.
Yeah.
So is that the type of person that you can go in and find? Because that is an avenue where you could maybe get a guy who's willing to stay there for longer than you would expect. There's really three avenues that you can go down. And your best case scenario on all of them, it's pretty bleak. But can you find your version of a Chris Peterson? Can you find that person who is willing to stay at WSU because that's as high as they want to go? Like, UNLV got Dan Mullen. I think UNLV might be a better spot right now than WSU, especially with all the money that seems to be getting thrown UNLV's way for the possibility of them moving up into better conferences. But if UNLV can go find a guy like a Dan Mullen who had success at smaller schools, Mississippi State, right? And then he went to a bigger school, had a bunch of cooks in the kitchen. He was great, had a year where he wasn't great, mm-hmm. and then he got canned and yep. is like, I don't want to deal with that anymore. I want more power. I want more control, and I don't want to deal with as many cooks in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Can you find a guy like that? And can you shell out that money? Mike Leach was kind of that guy, so you've done it once before. Who fits that mold that you can go and get? It's a very narrow mold, but I think that's your best case scenario for winning.
Let's shift gears to the college football playoff ESPN put out an interesting list this morning, and if you know this program, you know we love our lists. The top 50 players in the college football playoff, or at least the most interesting 50 players in the college football playoff. How many Ducks on that list, and how many do you agree with? We'll get to that coming up next. Primetime and SOB edition right here on 1080 The Fan. The crooner of all crooners, a man after Schulte's heart, Michael Bublé.
Some people say I sound just like him.
Most.
So sexy.
I'm so sad that this isn't Ordner's jam, but you know what?
You suck.
Let your heart be light.
I give this two thumbs.
You are just the worst.
I don't need to hear this from Michael Bubbles.
Yeah, exactly. Don't think I'd ever want to spend Christmas at your house.
My house, he gets played a lot, which I rail against, and then I get shot down, and then it is what it is.
Well, so we know some smart people.
We know Ortner's one and only liked Christmas song, Justin Bieber's "Under the Mistletoe." Schulte, do you have a number like a hard and fast number one?
I mean, honestly, it's the Christmas song, but it's Mel Torme's version. I like the Velvet Frog, and he wrote the Christmas song by, you know, Nat King Cole. I think is the big one, but yeah, okay. The Christmas song. Chestnuts roasting.
Meanwhile, in the break, Will's been informed by one of his friends that he's had his man card taken. For choosing the Justin Bieber song as the only and number one Christmas song.
I said you can throw Dropkick Murphys in there, too.
Theirs. Excuse me.
That's right.
That makes your list so much better.
Only the best Christmas songs over here. Well, look, I've been more of an Adam Sandler Hanukkah song guy.
Let's get into the lists. We love lists on this show. And ESPN came out today with a top 50 list. And now, their words, this says, this is not a ranking of stars who accomplished the most in the regular season, per se, or necessarily a ranking of the players who will put up the biggest numbers over the next 7 weeks in the college football playoff, but consider it more of a viewer's guide when you tune in. These are the top 50 players that you don't want to miss. So they're hedging a little bit, saying, like, don't take this as, like, a rankings, but forget that. We can do whatever we want. We can take this as a rankings. There are six Oregon Ducks on the list. Want to do a little exercise here. Which six Ducks do you think would be on the list?
This is cheating. I've already done it with Dusty. Okay. I went through it and I missed two. So the two that I thought would have been on the list that weren't were Muhammad and Birch.
That's what I would have thought as well.
It's Mateo Uyangale, Jordan James, Connor Lee, Derek Harmon. Did I say Dylan Gabriel?
Not yet.
Dylan Gabriel.
And the straw that stirs the drink?
Tez Johnson.
So those are the six Ducks on the list. We'll start going through it a little bit. But I'm interested in highlighting some of these players because they all come from such different backgrounds, have had such different impacts on the season. But curious about, like, which are the teams with the best players going to be the ones standing at the end? I think that remains to be seen. I think a lot of it may come down to draw. It may come down to, in cases this weekend, it could come down to weather. It could come down to health. It could come down to who's losing guys in the portal, which not as much in the college football playoff. But just starting at the bottom here, we don't have to go through all 50, but the first name that really popped out, number 44 on this list, West Lynn's very own Sam Levitt, the quarterback for Arizona State. Now, just ahead of him at 42 is the Ohio State quarterback, Will Howard. And at 38, the Penn State quarterback, Drew Aller. We have had this conversation on primetime before, but I'm interested. I haven't got your take on it, Will, or you, Schulte. I think it's safe to say that Dylan Gabriel is the best quarterback in the college football playoff field. But who's the second best quarterback in college football, in the college football playoff? Is it Aller? Is it Levitt? Is it Howard? Ewers. Is it Ewers?
Yeah.
Is it Rourke?
There's a world where it's Klubnik, and it's Klubnik because of his rushing ability. Like, right now, I want to say that it's a 10-point spread in Texas-Clemson. I would lean towards Clemson. They play a really good brand of defense. Texas's offense hasn't looked great against the top-tier defenses that they've played. And while this isn't as deep of a Clemson team as it has been in the past, that defense can play now. I think that game's going to be a lot closer. I think it will be a true one-score game. And Klubnik's ability to use his legs, he has multiple big 50, 60-yard touchdowns this season. Don't be shocked if kind of your eyes are open to Klubnik. Now, that being said, this is the same Cade Klubnik that looked horrific against Pittsburgh and couldn't throw the ball. And the only reason they won is because he ran. So if Drew Aller looks like he did against Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, then yeah, it might be Drew Aller. But you start going through this, it's a weak year for quarterbacks, and I think there's a world where you can make the argument that the best two or at least two of the top three quarterbacks aren't even in the playoff.
Oh yeah, oh for sure. Because I mean, Ward and Shadur. Yeah, absolutely.
To me, Ward and Shadur are two of the better quarterbacks. If Gabriel's probably three, and so whichever spot you rank them in, like two of the top three guys aren't even playing in this. Levitt, if they get Scadaboo going, I actually really like Sam Levitt. He's a younger kid.
But I do
he
too.
He can use his legs. Like he still makes some young mistakes, but as the season has gone on, he has looked better and better. He's smart with the football. He doesn't turn the football over. He makes a lot of NFL-type passes. He has a strong arm, but he's smart with it. Like, he's not going to force a ball into double coverage. He's going to go out there. Like, he was missing his number one wide receiver in that Big 12 championship game, and he still lit up a very good Iowa State defense. And so the more and more I watch Levitt, his upside, I really like him, man, and I think that there was a big miss by the local schools of not grabbing him out of high school.
Well, and so there's reportedly some drama about that. Was that he wanted to be a beef. He wanted to be selected, essentially chosen by Jonathan Smith, and Jonathan Smith either didn't have an offer for him or wasn't willing to commit to him, and so he goes to Michigan State, and the very first thing that happened when Jonathan Smith announced he was going to Michigan State was Sam Levitt hitting the transfer portal.
Bye.
That was like the knee-jerk, like, chain reaction, first domino to fall. It wasn't even like other coaches, and it was like Sam Levitt gone. See you, Coach Smith. I'm not here. I'm not about it. But it's been really fun watching him come into his own and now be a quarterback on a contending team. And just for the sake of the list and those rankings, you know who the highest ranked quarterback is on this list behind Dylan Gabriel? It's none of the guys we've talked about. It's Curtis Rourke.
He's been very good this year. And to be 100% fair, it's not like he's gone against the best defenses.
Nope.
And the best defense that he faced, he got rocked.
And that's a tough thing now, because with these conferences all being, frankly, kind of diluted and watered down, most quarterbacks, most players haven't had the opportunity to play against the best week in and week out, unless maybe you're talking about SEC competition. I mean, the fact that you're talking about, without question, the second strongest league, maybe the strongest league in the Big Ten,
right,
and saying, well, the guy from one of the best teams didn't play anybody. Like, how's that possible? But again, right, that's kind of where we are, and so it's a weird thing to try to navigate.
He's highly efficient with the football.
It's not just 10 teams in the Big Ten. It's 18. So
exactly.
You can't really play everybody in the same season, and I know nobody remembers that when we're talking about schedules year to year, but I'd put Rourke even above Quinn Ewers. It's kind of crazy looking at the odds to see who's going to lead the college football playoff in passing yards.
I haven't looked at those numbers, but that might be something fascinating for us to get into tomorrow, because I would want to know about that.
Yeah, we should dive into it. I'll tell you right now, at the top, though, is Quinn Ewers. I'm assuming most people think Texas is going to get to the championship game with those odds. It's frustrating because Texas kind of covers up for Quinn Ewers, right? I like Sam Levitt. I really like Klubnik. The ability to be a dual-threat quarterback in college football, I think, is essential to be in the top five, especially in the college football playoff, like it's positioned the way it is now. And Drew Aller with Adam Warren, are you freaking kidding me? That's something that you got to be scary, or that you got to be scared of, excuse me.
Well, and Clemson, you know, it's one of those things that's starting to feel like Clemson's demise had been greatly overstated. They obviously had a bad year, a down year last year, and Klubnik wasn't anything to write home about. I think he kind of earned the label of he's not all that, at least he's not the recruit he was supposed to be. The guy went for 33 touchdowns and 5 picks this year, and he has the running ability. I mean, he's very much legit, and so I think he could give Texas trouble.
40 touchdowns this year.
And frankly,
40.
There's still rumblings that they're going to give Arch more of a look, or that Arch could go in for Ewers if Ewers doesn't look good. We've seen him hooked once this year already, so I'll be interested to see what happens with the quarterbacks in the playoff. We still have more to get to on this list, and we will do that coming up on the other side of the break. Our college football cranberry cocktail continues next on Primetime, 1080 The Fan.